It's time to get your goalkeeping groove on with the ultimate at-home goalkeeping workout. Want to top up on your training? Join ex-Premier League stopper Richard Lee from the comfort of your own home. For 30 minutes, three times per week, Rich will take to Instagram Live and run viewers through an easy-to-follow training routine developed from his years of professional experience working with first-class goalkeepers and goalkeeping coaches. Work on and improve speed, strength, technique, and many other aspects of your game while engaging the core muscle groups and athletic ability required to be a top goalkeeper.
Just there, nice and simple. Just right hand to left hand, get the ball moving, get a little bit higher. Good, right into some straight into some goalkeeping core. So ball out in front, nice squat down and up.
All you need is a few essential household items, a good Wi-Fi connection, and a small space at home. With a weekly mindset session and goalkeeper quiz to boot, consider this your one-stop shop for goalkeeping growth. Join the Joe Wicks of goalkeeping today on a free one-week trial with no obligation to continue. Visit goalkeepersunion.net/workout for more details.
You've been brilliant. You always are. Well done. Great attitude. I'll see you shortly. Take care.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the frantic voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
It is a busy time currently, Matthew. Busy time.
Crazy times, a crazy week for the championship indeed, where you look after a lot of goalkeepers. I say look after, it's like you babysit the goalkeepers. It's not that you do that. You are a player liaison, so you work with a number of goalkeepers. And Wednesday was bonkers, and it's been bonkers ever since. The phone has not stopped a ringing.
Yeah, no, it was really on Wednesday. I mean, for anyone that was tuned into the championship action, promotions, obviously relegation. So a few of the goalkeepers that I work with, one in particular got promoted, one got relegated, a few mid-table, but good games, some indifferent games. So it's been a crazy week on that front. And now, of course, we see the merry-go-round over the next couple of weeks. Well, I suppose until October. I think October 5th, I believe, is the transfer deadline. So no doubt we'll see a lot of movement in the goalkeeping world over the next few weeks.
It's a bit weird that, isn't it? Because we talk about players' contracts, but for those who look after the players as well and have to conduct a lot of these business deals, your goalposts have moved as well. So you've got new dates, you've got new... Are there any new regulations, any new rules that have come in, or is everything the same? It's just been shifted.
It's very similar. It's shifted. I believe October 5th is now the date. Obviously, normally it's September 1st or there or thereabouts. So it's all a bit strange. And the other strange thing, I know this is goalkeeping related, of course, because for a lot of the goalkeepers where ordinarily the summer window can be quite an exciting time, it could be very, very different this summer with COVID, with the fact that there's potentially salary caps coming in, League One, League Two, with the fact that clubs may not have as much money as they once had. You do just wonder what kind of a window it will be for goalkeepers in particular. You know, will there be clubs in the championship splashing out big money on goalkeepers? We're not too sure. I guess we'll see over the next month or two.
Give me an idea for a podcast episode, Rich. Perhaps we'll do that in the summer and we'll get right into the nitty-gritty of what it means to be a goalkeeper liaison, an advisor, an agent, shall we say, to goalkeepers during the summer transfer window. But let's get on to the action. It was a bonkers evening on Wednesday. We're not going to delve too much into the ups, the downs, all the permutations around that because it's been covered elsewhere in depth. Instead, we are going to look at some of the key goalkeeping moments from the evening. But first, Richard, your very, very brief reaction to the events.
Well, so I watched the West Brom game. And actually, before the game prior to that, Brentford away at Stoke, I think West Brom had moved as far as 8-1 to get promoted. And then, of course, Brentford, the unthinkable happens against Stoke. And then who would have called that? 7 wins in a row and they would lose to Stoke and lose to Barnsley, which obviously from a personal point of view, my links for Brentford, disappointing. Of course, certainly going into the playoffs now on the back of two defeats, you do wonder how they'll be able to bounce back from that. It's West Brom. Credit to them. Fantastic. Premier League team once again. But I think it's fair to say they stumbled over the line. No wins in the last four. Some interesting goalkeeping performances, which we're going to touch on in the Championship. And I know that we've got a lot of Championship listeners, people that are very interested in the Championship. And certainly on the final day, final games, there were some very good performances, very important performances too.
Yep, and one of those performances, Jack Walton, the young goalkeeper at Barnsley. Let's talk about this because we haven't actually got into him yet. He's come in since lockdown to play. He's a young goalkeeper, just 23 years old. He made a great save from Brian Mbeumo in that game against Brentford that they incredibly won in the dying moments. Brilliant save. And I was thinking about this when I was looking at the various saves that were going on. We're going to get on to Marek Rodak, made a good save from Balogun in the game between Fulham and Wigan. Not as pivotal, that one, but you look at that save from Walton, you look at the save from Adam Davies against Brentford a few days ago as well, and you think, crikey, those saves, they've defined the season. And yes, they have, because they've saved when it matters. But equally, there's a save on the opening day. There's a save midway through the season that's won 3 points as well. But you talk about that power of recency. We really place emphasis on it, don't we? When it happens in a game like that, when Jack Walton makes a save like that, which guarantees, well, not guarantees, but it at least helps Barnsley get those 3 points. It just seems so much more important.
I think for me, it's more the fact he is a young goalkeeper to come into some of the biggest games in the club's history, certainly in the recent history. You know, two games to go, and they've got Notts Forest away, I believe it was, and Brentford at home. And essentially, they need 6 points to find themselves in the Championship next season. Like, everybody had written them off. So for a young lad to come in, the pressure that's on your shoulders, and he did it once previously, actually. He came in for Adam Davies back end of the Championship season a couple of seasons ago, which wasn't successful in the end, and they ended up going down. Of course, Adam Davies then played the entirety of the League One season. And again, he stepped in for the final few games. But absolute credit to him to have the bravery, the nerve to step up for some of these games and put in the performances that he did. Certainly, the save that you mentioned is an excellent, excellent save. One-handed save, moving across his goal, moving at pace. The ball comes at him at pace, and the reactions he shows and the strength of wrist, strength of hand in order to put it onto the post in the end. Brilliant, brilliant save. But for me, more credit for the bravery that he's shown to step in and perform at the level that he has for such a young goalkeeper.
Yeah, Brad Collins and Sam Radling are the other two goalkeepers this season. But it was lovely to see the scenes at the end of that game with Gerhard Struber. And you could see he saw Jack Walton and he looked at him like a dad would look at a son, and a real sense of, I respect you, lad. And they embraced and a lovely hug, which was lovely to see. Not if you're a Wigan fan, of course. Well, actually, get onto the Wigan game. You spoke about Marek Rodak. Great save. Great save from Balogun in the game between Wigan and Fulham. Down to his right, a low header. Really, really good save.
Yeah, well, yeah. Look, do you know what, Marek, I think, and it'll be very interesting how he performs in the playoffs. You get the impression he's the type of character that will be ready for that environment. Look, his career has just gone from strength to strength. He's climbed the leagues. He's done it exactly how I recommend young goalkeepers to do it, where you go league by league by league. Of course, largely with Rotherham, and now he's showing what he can do with Fulham. Very much established himself there as first choice. Fulham fans love him. I'd say that at times he can be a bit unorthodox, but I like how he plays. He's very, very effective, brilliant distributor of the ball. And you saw the athleticism, the spring that he's got, the speed he's got. And it is an excellent save. For me, it was a decision-making as well. Ball gets crossed in and you've got that decision. Can you come? No. Okay, retreat to your line. Give yourself maximum reaction time, body weight forward when you're on your line so that you can then get down to the sides and potentially make the save. So for me, technically, this is a perfect save. Retreat, set, explodes down to the right. Good parry, great save.
Moving on to that game at the Hawthorns, I'm nitpicking here, but that second goal for West Brom scored by Callum Robinson. It was a great bit of play from Grady Diangana. Tricked his way down the left flank, provided the cross for Robinson. Or was it, actually? You could argue he should never have been able to squeeze through those two QPR players. But can you explain Joe Lumley's positioning on the cross and the subsequent goal? Because it looked like he initially came for the cross, realised he wasn't going to get anywhere near it, and then slides into this nothingness to give Robinson an empty net. Yes, it probably would have been a tap-in regardless, but could Lumley have done slightly better there in terms of his decision-making?
Potentially. First and foremost, made some great saves in the game. Mentioned that I watched this game and He really did frustrate West Brom. Brilliant save down to his left in the second
Gravinovic.
Half.
Gravinovic, yeah, he made up for it with that save. Yeah.
Fantastic save, fantastic save. But what I'd say now on this one, and again, goalkeepers will appreciate this, it's that horrible ball into the corridor of uncertainty. POMO is what it's known as, the position of most opportunity, I think it is. That's what they're told to do. Put it into that corridor. Because you actually look where the ball goes. It's about 7 yards from goal. So on the face of it, you say that he shouldn't come for that. It's a little bit too far out. He would have had to have had a very advanced starting position. And even then, it still might be a bit of a struggle to get there. But you can see exactly what's happened. We've all been there where you're tempted by it. It continues to move away from you. And the moment that you realise that you can't get there, it's too late. And you're already too advanced off your line. He's obviously then tried to get back, slipped, and ends up making an easy finish. So could he have made it more difficult? Yeah, similar to what we just spoke about Marek Rodak. The difference being Marek Rodak made the decision to retreat very early. Retreats to his line, body weight forward, and then you look to make the save. In this particular situation, he'd gone a little bit too far, got tempted by it, couldn't quite get there. And in the end, you end up in no man's land and slip like he did. For me, no blame. I know some people say, well, then surely he should retreat to his line. But I just know that so many of us have been caught in that situation. He probably scores anyway, as you say. I think if Joe Lumley were to look at that again, the only difference would have been that, would have been to make the decision ever so slightly earlier, retreat to his line, and at least then give himself a little bit more of a chance. But I don't want that to take away from his performance, because I think that, yeah, he could have been the reason that West Brom didn't go up. You know, had Brentford had done the job their end, I think we'd have been talking about the Joe Lumley performance as potentially one that cost West Brom, because he did. He made several excellent saves, and I thought he was very, very assured. And he's finished the season brilliantly. I know he got a little bit of stick earlier in the season, but he's finished the season brilliantly, so credit to him.
We'll do a bigger roundup in a couple of weeks when all football has finished for the summer, for the shorter break that it's going to be this summer. But let's just quickly look at who is going to go into the Premier League. And as a result of that game, Sam Johnstone up in the Premier League. Really looking forward to seeing him, of course, came through the ranks at Manchester United. Didn't quite work out for him there, but has a chance to return to his old employers. We don't know what's going to happen with Leeds yet, whether it will be Kiko Kassir, whether they're going to plump with Meslier. They've got Mierzek in reserve as well, or whether they go into the market for a new goalkeeper. But Johnstone in particular in the Premier League, I'm up for that.
Yeah, fantastic. In fact, he's one we should get on the podcast because he is a fan of what we do. So we'll look to get him on the podcast soon. But look, huge credit to him. I know he's another one, bizarrely, for as well as he's done this season, there are little pockets where he does get a bit of stick. And actually, interestingly, he put out a tweet after the game. Someone gave him a bit of stick, calling him lucky or something. And he told him basically to shut up and said, good night, Mr. Negative. So he actually gave him a little bit of stick back, which was interesting. But for me, look, he is a Premier League goalkeeper. He's going to have the opportunity to show it next season. Got all the attributes, really good shape. And what I mean by that is you look at certain goalkeepers, and he just, you know, he's built, he's got speed, spring, distribution's good, confidence, plays with his chest out, great body language. I enjoy watching him play. I'm really, really interested to see how he'll perform in the Premier League. I'm interested to see what West Brom do goalkeeper-wise. They've obviously got Jonathan Bond, who's very, very good as well there. Whether they bring in another goalkeeper to have that trio of goalkeepers. So we'll see how that one plays out. But no, for Sam Johnstone, he would have been delighted the other night, because it's been a tough couple of weeks for West Brom where they've been struggling to get themselves over the line. But to do it and to look back over the season that he's had, it's been another excellent season. He's building a really, really good career for himself.
And sadly, departing the Championship is Charlton and Dylan Phillips. Now, they played Leeds United. Tough game on your final day of the season to play the Championship winners. Or maybe not so tough. I don't know. Sometimes you expect them to take their foot off the pedal. They did not. They won 4-0. It could have been a lot more. Dylan classically made some Dylan-esque saves in that game. But going down from the Championship, you'd have to look at Dylan Phillips, especially after this season, after the past two seasons, and think that is not a League One goalkeeper anymore.
No. Well, look, statistically, he's been top three last couple of seasons. I've got a lot of admirers on the back of this season. Firstly, I think Charlton, on the whole, big, big credit to Lee Bowyer on what they've done, because I think they've been working on a shoestring. It's been a bit of a nightmare behind the scenes by all accounts, but they've dug in there. And you feel for them, because the actual points total they got was very, very good. You know, goals conceded is very low for where they are. So from Dylan's point of view, obviously hugely disappointing. He did clean up on Player of the Year and all that, but you know, often that doesn't count for loads when you've got the disappointment of relegation. But certainly for me, obviously, a lot of the guys know that I'm very close to him. He'll bounce back, strong, strong mentality. And no doubt he's got a huge career ahead of him. And no doubt he'll have plenty of suitors in the Championship. Just depends on what Charlton choose to do and what Charlton do behind the scenes. Touched on it before. It's not necessarily for this podcast. but there are some interesting things going on there by all accounts. So hopefully the club sorts themselves out. But no doubt, regardless, Dylan will go on to great things, I'm sure.
Commentary Corner. Okay, Commentary Corner. Richard, Jamie Carragher, and a new entry with us this week, John Digger Barnes. He was on the halftime panel, had plenty to say about Kepa, the Chelsea goalkeeper. Now, I was watching this, and I don't know whether I'm missing something here. And Chelsea fans might say, yes, you are absolutely missing something. I know that Kepa hasn't been as good as a £72 million goalkeeper should have been this season. But I also don't think that he's been dreadful. And I really do feel, I know we've spoken about this before, that there is an agenda towards him, and one that I can't quite put my finger on. I don't even know. It's weird. It's just weird to hear what commentators and pundits and analysts are saying about Kepa, because it feels like the claws are out. I'm going to read out what Jamie Carragher and Martin Tyler were saying during that game between Liverpool and Chelsea during the week. Now, Naby Keita scored the first goal. Great goal. But after he'd scored it and they looked at the replay, Jamie Carragher said, and that's one of the few times this season that goalkeeper can't do much better than that. And I thought, that's completely unnecessary. There's zero reason for you to have a dig at Kepa when Naby Keita has just whacked one in off the bar into the top bins. He also said there was one against Zaha. We know that goal against Crystal Palace a few weeks ago, and he got a bit of criticism for that. The one against Zaha, said Carragher, I think he should have done much better with. I think the pace of the ball just beats him there. I'd love to compare the two. Brilliant. Okay. Thank you, Jamie. And then a bit later on, a bit like when Gary Neville went back to Hugo Lloris in Tottenham's game against Leicester a week or so ago, Jamie Carragher had also been thinking, been mulling around in his head. Going back, Martin, to how goalkeepers are, I actually look at this Chelsea team and there's a lot I like about it. And it does, in some ways, remind me of the position maybe Jurgen Klopp was in a couple of years ago, where he's done as much as he can. Yes, Frank is still in his early stages, but those big signings that completely transform you as a team, and then it cut to Petr Cech in the stands. And he goes, see, he was the one who transformed Chelsea, started winning titles, still feel Chelsea, and even the centre-backs as well. See how many goals they've conceded. A lot of that is down to the goalkeeper being totally honest. I'm glad he's being totally honest, because we wouldn't want him to be half honest now, would we? And then Trent Alexander-Arnold stepped up for a free kick that never was a free kick. It was not a foul from Mateo Kovacic on Sadio Mane. Frank Lampard made that abundantly clear on the touchline. Before the free kick, Jamie Carragher said, very similar position to Crystal Palace one, Martin. No one, absolutely no one, said anything about Kepa's position before the free kick was taken. After he'd scored it, Trent Alexander-Arnold, with a brilliant effort, no one said anything again. And then it was about 3 or 4 minutes later, Jamie Carragher comes in and says, it'll be interesting when we get a chance to look at the goalkeeper with reference to that goal. And he says, I just wonder, step across that side. He's had warning, the Crystal Palace free kick and the one at Stamford Bridge earlier on in the season. And that was it. And then he says, does Jorginho just come across his vision? That was it. I mean, what is going on out there?
Well, Shall I take it away? Look, this comes back to something we've spoke about a lot, which, and this is where it isn't fair. It isn't fair because it's a lot of it, majority isn't based on factual evidence. It's based on preconceived ideas. And you're right, the commentary there is a shambles. It's an absolute disgrace. It's almost bullying, you know, to say something along the lines of, that's one that he couldn't do with, finally, you know, along those lines, as if like he's at fault for every goal, which isn't true. Do you know what happens? And this is where then people will then find things to back up their beliefs. So you might see the odd stat out there about his save percentage being pretty low or whatever it might be. For me, a lot of it comes down to preconceived ideas. What I mean by this is that, okay, you look at Kepa, and what sort of feeling do you get? Do you get a warm feeling? You look at Alisson, you get a feeling of someone who you know is quite assured and he comes across well. His social media is great. He seems like a nice guy. And a lot of it is the fact that he comes across brilliantly. Well, the examples we've had of Kepa have been the League Cup final where, okay, you know, I've got a different opinion to most on this, but he didn't look good in that situation. It's fair to say, like, his actions there where he's refusing to get substituted, a lot of built an opinion about him as a character during that time. He did then have a rough patch where a few goals went in and you question whether he could do a little bit better. a lot of people then turned against him. He's got a huge price tag on his head, which again is a nice reason as to why people might turn against him. But very few actually break things down and look at them factually. He's got no chance on that free kick. You could nitpick and say he's maybe marginally too far over. I'll tell you what you could do is look at the wall and look at the fact that Mason Mount ducks out of the free kick. Literally, it's going to hit him in the head. So what does he do? He moves his head out of the way. You could look at that and blame that. But no, no one's even mentioned that, that it's essentially gone through the wall and gone in too low, which has given Kepper even less of a chance. It just bugs me because this is it. It's preconceived ideas and it's a preconceived agenda that is then impacting the likes of Kepper, De Gea, Lloris at the moment. And you just feel for them. I don't know how that shifts because it's like anything. If someone's got an opinion on someone, it takes quite a big character to change that opinion. And I just wonder whether these commentators are able to do that. And if they're not, then these guys are just in for a hiding every week.
A little bit more, because they did not stop there. Oh no, Carragher went on, doesn't seem to get across or react quick enough, really. I'm not saying he should have stopped it. Okay, Jamie, so what are you saying? We put this out on Twitter, so the usual response. Which one is it? If you're saying he didn't seem to get across or react quick enough, but then you're also saying he shouldn't have stopped it, what are you saying? Also, the first Chelsea goal, Alisson was unlucky, made a decent stop from Willian, which was widely recognised as just that. But the parry looped up and into the path of Olivier Giroud to tap in. If that had been Kepa, I'm sure the reaction would have been, could the keeper have done better there? Could he have parried it to safety rather than up and back to the danger area for Giroud? But because it was Alisson and because we seemingly have this alternate approach, everyone said, fantastic save from Alisson. He just couldn't keep it out at the second attempt. A complete, like you said there, a completely different agenda for one goalkeeper compared to another.
It's exactly that. It's I don't want to use the word like unconscious bias. You effectively, you find what you're looking for. That's what happens. You'll find what you're looking for. So if you don't, we look, we're all guilty of this to an extent. If you really dislike a player, you will find things to back up that belief. And you'll make it stronger and stronger. The problem is when it's pundits who do influence the minds of millions and millions of people around the world, then instantly we're building a picture on these goalkeepers. You ask people in the street, what do you think of De Gea? It will be the same narrative that is being spread amongst the media. And it's very, very frustrating. It's something that I'd love to do more. And we obviously do our bit here. And it's great that we've got so many people that tune into this, so many people giving us their thoughts, opinions. And by the way, we've all got different opinions. I know some of you guys really don't like Kepa. That's absolutely fine. It is a game of opinions. The problem is when it's that high up and it's not backed up by factual evidence, then a lot of these goalkeepers simply don't stand a chance of ever turning it around. What can Kepa do now in order to turn this narrative around? Or is it a case you just move, go and start afresh somewhere else, a new country, and then maybe you can start from afresh and build a positive narrative? I don't know.
Okay, just to finish, because I know we're running out of time, I'll just give you the words from John Barnes. You'll love this. And then I'll go on to what they said after the restart as well, because they'd had time to think about it a little bit more. John Barnes first. You look at the goalkeeper and you're thinking, should he have made an attempt? But if he had made an attempt, he'd have got nowhere near it. We like to see goalkeepers making an attempt. But had he done that, that was a fantastic free kick. So then they came back in from halftime, right? They came back in from halftime, and just as they're about to kick off, Martin Tyler, are we being a bit harsh on Kepa, Jamie? He's young. He's still only 25, which is young for a goalkeeper. If he gets through this spell, plenty have improved. And then Carragher kind of went, yeah, well, you know, he said world record fee, worst save percentage. And then he referred to the free kick again and said, maybe you're on your way before he takes it, if you like. Right, okay, Jamie. All right, maybe you're on your way before he takes it, if you like. Okay, so what if he goes on his way and Trent puts it in the corner from whence he came?
It's absolutely
ridiculous. And I'll just finish, because then Carragher referenced the tweet that he got from Bayoak and Fenwa. And he said, oh, I've been called out by Bayoak and Fenwa, so it must mean that I'm wrong. Akinfenwa basically tweeted, don't be like that. The keeper had no chance. Now, Akinfenwa, big Liverpool fan. It was probably slightly banter, but also a bit like, Jamie, rein it in. And Jamie Carragher, I looked at this afterwards, and this is the best part of it all. He responded saying, sorry, big man. When I clicked onto the tweet, underneath it, it had translate tweet. You know how it has translate tweet when there's a tweet in like a foreign language or something, and we'll turn it into English for you? Jamie Carragher had written, sorry, big man, and it said translate tweet. No idea what you're saying, Jamie. Not a clue.
Love it, love it. No, you said everything there. For me, actually, interestingly, don't mind sharing this, I have got a meeting soon with Sky Sports News. I'm going to pitch the idea of doing just a section, something where we can not just back up, because I've said this over and over, it's not just necessarily backing up the goalkeepers or defending the goalkeepers, because sometimes they are at fault, okay? It's more just being objective about the situation. And unfortunately, we haven't got that at the moment. There are too many that do seem to have a preconceived agenda. They have the goalies they like, the goalies they don't like, and they'll continue to find what they're looking for. With Alisson, by the way, he's been fantastic, but they'll continue to find reasons for him to be fantastic until he makes 10 mistakes in a row, and then maybe that narrative changes. Or maybe he's been here for several years and we get bored of him and we get the overfamiliarity, like we've got with Lloris, like we've got with a couple of other goalkeepers, and maybe that narrative changes. But for now, I think we're just going to have to put up with the fact that there are preconceived ideas.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. We'll see you next time.